Oh, hey there. I'm Guy Brennan. Welcome to a bonus Pop Rocket, the Oscars edition. Joining me now to discuss the craziest Oscars of all time are journalist and novelist Margaret Wobbler. It was a difficult evening for all of us. Academic and karaoke artist, what are we calling you?
People like Dyke About Town. I know you feel shy about saying it.
I like Dyke About Town as well.
Also, amateur stunt eater is another one.
That's beautiful. And my colleague, writer for the Mindy Project, Twitter artist, and Academy Award, like...
Devotee?
Devotee is very good.
I was thinking more like Maven.
Oh, I love that.
Then it needs to be Oscars Maven. Mm-hmm. Oscars yeah. Maven Chris Schleicher.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello, Chris. Chris, I've explained a lot about you, and you've been on the show before, but what more can you tell people about yourself?
I was just trying to think of a moniker for myself, and I think Notorious Former Teenager is one I like to go by, Precocious Child.
Former semi-professional figure skater.
Oh, right. That's like my whole backstory.
By the way, follow us on Twitter. We're at Pop Rocket, but also you should follow Chris, and also you should follow Karen and Margaret, because that's good times, too. We post cool pop culture stuff over there every day at Pop Rocket. You'll be getting our regularly scheduled Pop Rocket out later this week, but we're here to talk about the Oscars because we thought you needed the fresh, fresh tea. All right, guys, let's get into this. Margaret, take us through your emotional journey.
Are we talking about the last 5 minutes?
The whole thing.
Because that's what I need to go to, like, immediately.
Okay, then let's go there immediately. What was your experience of the last 5 minutes of the Oscars?
I mean, I honestly feel like we are living in the Matrix and somebody spilled Coca-Cola all over the motherboard. Like, things went crazy. I mean, I was watching it. I was totally expecting La La Land to win. So when they announced it, I thought, okay, yeah, business as usual. And honestly, I thought that Warren Beatty was just being cute and stretching it out
yes.
for drama and jokes, and I actually laughed when he was doing it. But once the moment came where the guy ended his speech, Fred Berger, I think, the last producer to speak, and he said, by the way, we lost. Then it was like, and you see all these people running around.
His forced graciousness bordered on bitchiness.
Well, you're talking about the first guy. The first guy like Mr. Gracious, Jordan Horowitz, who was the one who ripped the moonlight card out of Warren Beatty's confused paws and basically showed it to the camera.
That
like,
wasn't
look.
Jordan Horowitz, though, right? Chris knows all of these people because they went to his accursed college.
I'm not familiar with the producers, but... I do like that in this moment, I prove my theory that wherever Faye Dunaway goes, chaos follows.
yeah, because everybody blamed Warren, but it was truly Faye's...
I mean, to me, it was a beautiful classic actress moment of, like, let me glossily do whatever seems to come naturally, and if there's a problem, we'll just do another take, right?
I mean, can I, like, break down, like, I'm wearing a shirt for all of those who can't see me right now that has Jackie Onassis on it. Can I break down, like, the Zapruder footage
Natalie
of it?
Portman. As Jackie Onassis.
You know, she is so good that, like, the two are just one in my mind.
Okay, what's your Zapruder footage?
Okay, so, like, we see, if you zoom in on the back of the envelope, he has the best actress, like, a duplicate envelope.
Yeah.
And he pulls it open and looks at it in that moment that Margaret thought he's being cute, but it says Emma Stone, La La Land.
Right.
And he's like, is she a producer of La La Land? No.
Right.
He's, like, trying to piece it together.
He immediately goes to a producer place in his brain and is trying to solve things.
So he's showing it to Faye being like, I can't say this, something's up, but he's also too much of a man to be like, something's wrong here, can someone fix this? So he shows it to her to say why, and she thinks he's just being weird, and she sees the word La La Land, she's like, La La Land.
Well, La La Land was written so small on the bottom of that card, I was just like, good for Faye Dunaway's eyes.
Yeah.
So Margaret, like, the announcement happens, what's your emotional reaction? What happens to your Oscar pool?
I was completely screaming. Like, I had people over, and we were all like, what is happening? Like, everyone was so confused. And then it was amazing, though, once they did show the Moonlight people, like, all their expressions of shock and coming up. And I mean, I think it's regrettable that ultimately their moment got shrunken and somewhat taken away from them by just sheer chaos.
But I feel like the people who were most excited at that moment visibly were Taraji and Octavia. Like, the way that the audience was just sort of, like, erupting with shit, magic's happening. Okay, Karen, did you feel like it was our big brassy white movie getting all of the traditional love and sort of like a half-assed glory for Moonlight, or was it even more magical?
It was equal parts those things, because I think, you know, it is everything that's wrong with, you know, white supremacy, basically. It's just sort of, oh, we have partial information here. Let's just assume this juggernaut called La La Land actually won. Faye Dunaway just sees the words La La Land, doesn't really give a shit, and is like, if I'm wrong, I mean, they would have won anyway, right? Like, there's a kind of assumption about that. But then, you know, the chaos was... and then the ultimate, like, reveal that Moonlight really won was magical. But I really do think it sort of undercut the moment. And I think in my milieu, conspiracy theories were immediately about it. I mean, we were a conspiratorial group.
Russians?
Like, that had to be. Yeah, we were just like, oh, no, they totally staged that. That's some sort of weird attempt to go viral. I mean, you know, we were all spinning theories. And then we started to have a debate about whether or not that was possible. But, like, you know, then at that point, we completely missed the acceptance speech from the producers of Moonlight. And then it was over, and we're like, can we rewind? What can we do? Right? So,
live television production is always touch and go. The thing is that LA is usually so good at it, and New York is so terrible at it, that something like this happening, we, like, the Oscars is the machine. Like, they're the ones who are supposed to be able to pull this off.
But then when you read about the actual structure of how they have those envelopes set up with two people on either end of the stage holding a duplicate copy and each one giving a presenter an envelope, it just seems like, how does this not happen
right.
before?
I mean, there's like, one, yeah, there's one real winner in this scenario, and it's Marissa Tomei.
Yes.
We proved that if something goes wrong, they correct it.
Yeah.
You'll never have that slander against her again.
My friend Jonathan, who I believe shares a physician with her, said she was the first person to make a Marissa Tomei joke about that.
I mean, this has, I think, happened only once before, like, anywhere close to this scale. In, like, the 30s, Frank Capra and another Frank were nominated for director, I think directed Cavalcade, and the wrong Frank got called to the stage. But it's like this is the 30s last time something
like
that happened.
Supposedly, Sammy Davis Jr. In 1964 called out the name of someone who wasn't even nominated in the category. And I can't remember
really?
What it was. It was a technical award, yeah. So that did happen. But
he probably had too many G and T.
Yeah.
And, like, there is the 68 tie situation of who was it who was very confused by what was going on?
Two Julies?
No. It was Katharine Hepburn and Barbara tying. Oh,
okay.
And I believe it was a woman who gave it to them for some weird reason. Because normally it is the best actor from the year before. Mm. And the person was like, what's going on? Like, was confused by it. All right. My two big points about that final moment. A, it had been, if it was such an anemic sweep for La La Land by that point in time that fucking Hacksaw Ridge was taking them down in these technical categories, that if you're gonna sweep and you're that much of a splashy big movie, you're gonna be taking, like, these editing and sound awards, and they weren't getting them. So, like, when it won, it felt like such an anticlimax that it was interesting. But I do deeply love the fact that, like, La La Land, this movie about an inevitable happy ending. Like, even in, spoiler alert, to the degree that it gives you a non-happy ending, it's just destined you for a happy ending from the first moment, where, like, Moonlight is about the most earned happy ending on the planet. And it really felt like the moment at the Oscars was sort of actualizing both of those narratives.
And the quietness of the happy ending of Moonlight as well,
yeah.
The kind of stir that has no resolution.
Speaking to that anemic sweep for a second, I think there's been sort of a seismic shift in the Oscars since, in 2009, we expanded picture to anywhere between 5 and 10, depending on their formula, that sweeps don't happen that same way anymore.
Yeah.
Like, editing and director always went to the best picture. The past 4 out of 5 years, director and picture didn't match. And the past 3 years, editing didn't go to the best picture.
Well, director and picture, where traditionally a director-picture break was a huge, huge noteworthy thing. And since we've gone to 10, it's more the rule than the exception. Mm-hmm. Why?
I think it's a feeling of, like, there are more movies in the conversation, and it's sort of a spreading the love around, or we go to a thing that we felt like this is a very interesting direction, or it was like the most directed thing, even if it wasn't the movie I loved the most.
You know, Justin Chang in the LA Times write-up of the whole thing had this interesting point to make, where one of the first things that should have cued us off to the strangeness of La La Land winning the Best Picture is that Emma Stone won for the Best Actress, and that apparently does not happen very often.
No.
Hilary Swank was the last, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that says something very interesting, too, about what we consider Best Pictures and can they be anchored by women. So I think that was just an interesting point to bring up in the whole thing.
Let's move this to a smooth segue to what was one of the weirdly thinnest Best Actress categories of a long time. Mm. Like, it was however much I would have liked the idea that someone could have beaten Emma Stone, because however good she was in La La Land, I just didn't like La La Land that much. But the thing is we had no one on offer except for Natalie Portman, who won a handful of years ago. Yeah.
We had two of the biggest contenders, like, kneecapped before the awards happened.
Take us through it.
People thought Annette Bening, this was finally her year, maybe, for 20th Century Women, because she's been nominated so many times and never won. And while I still don't think it would have happened for her, she would have been someone that pulled votes in a certain way.
Yeah.
Amy Adams in Arrival, another person who hasn't won that people thought maybe this could happen.
Well, and a third figure, Viola Davis for Fences, who's in 80% of that movie, put herself into Best Supporting Actress so it would be a lock. And it ended up succeeding, but Karen Tongson, was it a good strategy, or should she have gotten a Best Actress out of this year?
I think that she shouldn't have played it safe, and the production shouldn't have played it safe and campaigned for Supporting Actress. I think that she would have had a really strong shot at the Best Actress trophy, especially considering, you know, you had Meryl in a kind of lesser Meryl role, right? That it's not going to be one of the ones that Meryl wins for.
Replacing Music of the Heart, Music of the Heart is always that Meryl nomination where you're like, really?
Yeah.
But Florence Foster Jenkins is like 1,000 times more really than Music of the Heart.
Yeah. And also, I did for a moment imagine Isabelle Huppert might, you know, sneak off with a trophy and pull a Roberto Benigni, like the kind of illustrious foreign actress.
Once every two or three decades,
that,
we hand it to somebody from another language.
Yeah, and so I thought maybe this will happen. And in fact, I lost the Oscar pool because I made that choice. But yeah, I think that Viola Davis really would have shaken up that category. And as Chris was saying, you know, Amy Adams and Annette Bening would have made it a much tighter race.
Like, it's so interesting that these very small naturalistic performances were not respected, but somebody singing her best, if we want to put it that way, managed to take it home. Because, like, there just wasn't that much character to wrap yourself around. It was essentially an Academy Award for her being likable, which I'm okay with at a blindside Sandy Bullock point in your career, but maybe not for Emma Stone 5 to 6 years into her career. Does anyone want to fight with me about this?
I mean, I will say that we have this sort of, like, illusion in our mind that actress works like the other categories and will reward older people, which happens a lot for the men. But it is usually a young woman's game. It's the exception to the rule that the Grand Dame wins. And every year we're like, maybe it's Charlotte Rampling this year. Maybe it's Emmanuelle Riva. And it's like they consider that just an award to be nominated for old women, but they really value your young Brie Larson's and Natalie Portman's. And
well, except for those people who march their way to Geraldine Page status and have so many nominations. And it is like with Amy Adams, she is getting to that point where you're like, eventually we're just going to have to give her one. But that can fall apart for people. Glenn Close is no closer to getting an Academy Award now. Like, in 1988, it was at the tip of her fingers, and now nothing.
I do think, though, the Viola Davis strategy of the supporting actress was the way to go, because I think she would have, I mean, she just clearly was going to win that category.
Yeah.
And I also feel like at the end of the day, all you hear is Viola Davis, winner of 5 Academy Awards or whatever.
Right.
Like, it's splitting hairs to sort of get into whether it's a supporting or lead or whatever. I also think she should just make all the speeches from now on. Like, anytime anybody's flubbing or starting to thank their agent at CAA, just bring Viola Davis up there and interrupt and make it magical.
Elegantly use the word exhume repeatedly in that way that didn't make it seem glitchy or cheesy. It was
people
expert.
Ask me all the time, what kind of stories do you want to tell, Viola? And I say, exhume those bodies. Exhume those stories. The stories of the people who dreamed big and never saw those dreams to fruition. People who fell in love and lost. I became an artist, and thank God I did, because we are the only profession that celebrates what it means to live a life.
It was like a beautiful, real contemplation of what we haven't been doing with movies and what we could maybe do with movies.
Well, it was the guy, though, who insisted on making his speech, Fred Berger, one of the La La Land producers, even after he found out Moonlighting actually won.
Yeah.
Who I think my ire is most directed towards.
That's reasonable.
But you know, I was watching the Slate video today, which breaks down
too.
Second by second,
yeah.
You know, each moment. He shook his head. No, I don't want to go up to the mic.
Oh, so he was forced.
I think he went up to the mic just to sort of like keep the moment going.
Oh,
kill
that's
time.
Interesting.
I really do. I don't think he was up there just like, I'm going to do this anyway. I don't care the Moonlight won. I think he just was burning time until the whole thing got sorted.
Margaret. I'm going to assert that Viola Davis gave us a better Best Actress speech than Emma Stone did. What do you want? A breathless Anne Hathaway, I can't believe this happened to me? Or do you want, I have an agenda, I knew that this was a possibility, so I know what I'm going to talk about?
I love a good shock, but Emma Stone wasn't shocked.
Yeah.
She knew that she was going to get that award. And she got up there and she did the sort of like Taylor Swift, like playing the part a bit. And like,
And I
like her. I thought it was a charming speech. I thought it was perfectly fine, but it didn't move me. Whereas Viola Davis's speech like moved me. And she did use it to like craft a statement.
I feel like, with the exception of Emma Thompson, British people give the worst speeches. Like,
I was really talking about this. I feel like to foreign people, an Oscar isn't like a thing you've maybe dreamed of your whole life, unless you're Penelope Cruz, who gave like the best speech of all time.
It was real good.
So it's sort of like this cool thing you kind of, like, Tilda Swinton really did not care when she won. She's like, what is this thing?
But it's also like British reserve, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're just as emotional.
I really want for my speech someone who wanted it. Like, the best award speech of all time is when Elaine Stritch wins an Emmy. She's like, I won, and none of you won.
And look at the company I'm in. Just look at it. I mean, and I'm so glad none of them won. I'm so glad none of them won. I won. And I can hardly take a compliment. I've got a problem. Tonight, be my guest. I am so happy to have won this award, number one.
Like, I think we, especially with women, I feel like we teach them not to like admit that they want things and have ambitions. And it's like, I think it's cool. The whole Oscar race, people are like, oh, it's an honor just to be here. It's like, no, you want to win.
Well, Juliette Binoche in like 96 or whenever it was, when everybody thought it was going to be
Lauren Bacall,
and she like gets up there, is dressed like a goddamn princess, and like did not expect to have this moment, and is just sort of like flustered. So beautiful. I was scared Isabelle Huppert would win and like go up there and just say thank you, mention her agents, and leave.
You know, the one moment of Emma Stone's speech that I thought was very genuine, that usually when somebody does this it doesn't feel genuine, it was when she thanked her fellow actresses in the category.
Yeah.
It did feel real from her, and it made me think too about something Natalie Portman said recently in an NPR interview, in that there's so few movies that have multiple female roles that she doesn't get to act or get to know really the other female leads like out in her field. Like, she knows male actors more than she knows female actors. So I think that's like, there's something profound about that, and the fact that Emma Stone took that moment to be like, I admire all of you.
The thing that hit me about that moment was having this list of venerated actresses who will have careers forever, and Ruth Negga, who's one of those people. There's always that thing at the Academy Awards when people like Gabby Sidibe, or it's so frequently people of color, it's people who cannot be easily slotted into another role. And the question is, are we going to get to keep this person? And like, I respect how much Hollywood has come together to say, we have fucking uses for Gabby Sidibe. But it doesn't always happen. And there are those like really talented people who go the way of Dorothy Dandridge and just disappear afterwards.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say that I loved Ruth Negga's dress. Can we just talk about
that?
Did
she build
that
backwards from the ACLU ribbon? Because it popped so hard on the red that I was like,
it was so good.
I know, it was.
All right, let's segue naturally from Best Actress to fashion. Who came prepared? Who was a mistake?
Well, Taraji P. Henson was flawless and perfect. And the look was just so elegant and everything was spot on.
Well, also, it was so wonderful with the other women from Hidden Figures because it was like too much. It was Janelle Monáe showing up with too much in the best of ways. And then like Octavia Spencer saying, I will save the Tadashi, what's his name? Tadashi Soji or whatever his name is. Like she has this one designer who she uses in years where she's going to win and needs to look amazing. So she was phoning it in and like,
how many Muppets had to die for that dress?
but Taraji so perfectly styled. I wanted Hidden Figures to win Best Picture just so she could have a chance to snatch back the attention. Because her not getting respect for that role, where I thought she was really good and really funny, I think it all comes down to it's hard. She's a TV actor. Mm-hmm. Like, she took a TV role and people are having a hard time respecting her.
I truly was shocked, like, after I finally saw Hidden Figures, one of the final Best Picture nominees, that didn't get traction as a Best Actress contender because it kind of was a late breaker when we'd already decided on the nominees, which shows you how much it's just about, like, we decide on the couple people who are the contenders, but
right.
If that had been, like, in the blogs early on, like, Taraji's a contender, it starts to self-reinforce itself.
Taraji, I want to be her eyebrows when I grow up. I mean, her eyebrows alone are amazing, but I don't understand why Hidden Figures just didn't pick up much last night. Did they get anything?
No, I don't think so. And I think it comes down to we love that hero narrative when it's a dude, but it like the interesting thing about that movie is that it was classic hero narrative, but with people not doing classic hero things, and it was black women. And I feel like the gently corny charm of that movie made it hard for people to respect it when there is something so powerful about the fact that, like, this is the other side of the right stuff. The movie we gave Best Picture to in 1983.
I'm sorry. I'm going to fact check you on the fly right now.
I know. There were astronauts in both of them. but like, this is the other side of things that doesn't get seen, and they did such a beautiful job of portraying it, and it made so much money.
Money. It does feel like a movie, though, that's like from 1989.
Yeah, like it won Best Picture in 1994. You would be like, oh, yeah.
I know that some people felt it was... It had the feel of something that was made for TV almost.
Yeah.
I
didn't say that liking it.
Yeah,
liked it a lot.
Yeah, exactly. I liked it a lot as well. But I was with a lot of folks who work in the industry, different aspects of it, and they just felt like technically the film was kind of clunky in various ways and that there was something off about the camera work, blah, 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 blah. And also I think that people had a difficult time kind of connecting onto the revisions made in order to kind of make it such a success, particularly around kind of, you know, accentuating some of the roles of the white men, like the Kevin Costner character. And so I think that there was some ambivalence around the real kind of political impact or import of the film, given the white savior narrative.
Very true.
I want to make sure we, like, mention more fashion while we're on it.
Yes.
Janelle Monáe showing up like she's out of Elizabeth the Golden Age. Like,
yes.
I'm going to do a new silhouette that is, like, gigantic. I really loved.
Well,
and I was very into Nicole Kidman, like, inventing a new shade of white.
Can we talk, though, about how Nicole Kidman does not know how to clap?
Yes.
Did you guys see, she claps like
Australian.
An otter.
My theory,
she cannot, like, match her palms and clap.
My theory was she's transforming back into a seal, like an Irish Selkie. I think maybe her, like, nails she didn't want to hit together. It was she was having the time of her life.
Her attempting to dance is one of the most amazing things I have ever seen.
Keith Urban has the best time at every awards show. At the Grammys, he was also, like, grooving and shoulder dancing, and he just, like, he looks like the happiest lesbian from Miami.
I mean, that's got to be the best way to go to the Oscars. Like, you're nominated and you don't have a shot of winning at all, so you're just, like, there for the ride.
Back to Janelle Monáe for a moment. I love the thing of when somebody is the princess of the year.
Mm-hmm.
When Amy Adams was in Junebug in every movie. When Jessica Chastain was in every movie and Coriolanus. Like, when, and that Janelle Monáe was showing up, like, with two very solid Best Picture nominees behind her, though not nominated for anything, like, showing up like it's your night is the right choice.
Mm. Always. And I think she took real risks. This was one thing I was disappointed with across the board, is I didn't feel like there was a lot of risk this year. Uh-huh. Like, everybody's dress was, like, gold or black or red. Yeah. And that was, like, it. Like, there was no crazy colors. There's no crazy cuts. Like,
there was one crazy wig, though.
I loved her wig.
Are you talking about Holly?
We were talking about Halle Berry's, like, defend Halle Berry's wig.
I want there to be sparrows roosting in it, whatever. I just thought it was great and crazy and fun and, like she has a sense of humor, and also she just looks good no matter what she puts on.
So it wasn't one of those Oscars. So actually, my friend Eliza Skinner is now scared that we gave enough Academy Awards to black people last night that we won't do it for 3 years.
Oh, no.
Do you guys fear that? And also, do you feel, was Mahershala Ali the only gimme of the evening? Was that the free space on everyone's Oscar ballot?
I thought Mahershala was a little bit... Viola was the sure thing last night.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Mahershala had lost to Dev Patel and, weirdly, Aaron Taylor-Johnson at two big awards, so I was like, maybe it won't happen for him, because he's sort of, like, not as big of a part in the movie.
Right.
But I have that same concern about, like, post-Obama, we fixed racism, it's over. Like, we gave it to Moonlight and two black actors, it's over. Because, like, there's still, like, incredible diversity problems, especially in America. We frequently boil down racism to black versus white. But,
right.
Like, mm-hmm. Latino representation in the Oscars is like
is so
zero.
Limited. Yeah,
Asian like as we well.
They yeah, bring I mean, John Cho out to give
Emma,
the side.
Emma
tech
Stone
award.
Might be our first Asian Best Actress. But.
that was my yes.
Look, let us never forget the Miyoshi Umeki
Asian
and Dr. Hennes
Nyor.
But yeah, I was looking at the wikis for this day, and it listed the most recent like Asian nominee for Best Supporting Actress they had as Hailee Steinfeld.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She's
part Samoan?
Filipino.
Oh, okay.
She's Filipino. Yeah, part Filipino. I'm always reminded by all the Filipinos.
But also, like, yeah, so many, like, issues that hopefully we can build on this theme. Like, I think no movie directed by a woman won an Oscar last night in any category.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, Tony Erdmann probably had the best shot of winning, but yeah.
But, I mean, we did at least, there was the conversation from a couple of years ago about having no women's stories, and, like, having a rival just in the game, kind of. Having Hidden Figures in the game, kind of. And also, two movies about women knowing things and not just being the friend of a man.
Yeah, I mean, also, we can't underestimate the importance of Mahershala Ali as the first Muslim winner of the award.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is an interesting point. In
this year, especially also, yeah, The Salesman being a significant win, where we weren't sure if Asghar Farhadi was banned from the country or not, and that he could come but chose not to. It was weirdly surprisingly, like, it could have been a gigantically political thing, and it felt a little muted.
Yeah.
In a way that I was wondering why, and I was like, do people want their Oscar moment that's etched in stone forever to be, like, so linked to, like, remembering the politics of now?
Right.
But it's also sort of surrendering your moment to make that statement.
Did anybody have any concrete thoughts on all of the online theories about Brie Larson's reaction to... Casey Affleck.
Oh, I think it was very intentional. Mm-hmm.
I think so
she
too.
Definitely withheld applause and stood there stock still with her arms at her sides, because this is the second award she's had to give in this man who is, you know, sexually harassed two people who worked with him and settled out of court. And she's an advocate for sexual harassment or sexual assault survivors. And so it makes complete sense that she would withhold her applause. And I think it was the right thing to do. I think it was still professional, but very pointed. And if she had said something, it would have made it all about her.
Right.
And this was a way to get the statement across. Everyone, I mean, all the smart reporters were going to pick up on it, and she knew that. Yeah. So I think it was well played.
It's very The Crown to have your, like, tiny little gesture be very political. Did he get a standing ovation?
I all I can remember is Denzel looking furious.
Yeah.
Right, like, don't point me out, dude.
Okay, yeah. I legitimately thought that Denzel Washington had a chance to pull in a third last night. I thought that it was a weak enough field.
Yes.
I thought that Fences was amazing and, like, a, you know, like, a perfect forum for his skills. Like, I'll talk about it more in the next episode we do.
Well, and he won the SAG Award, which is pretty reliable harbinger of who will win the best actor.
And because it seems like the most Denzel-y of Denzel roles ever.
Yeah, and he was just so good. And I really thought that people had turned on Casey Affleck enough.
I thought so, too. I was actually surprised that he ended up pulling out the win last night, given the sort of drift away from him.
But we had, like, a cataclysmically historic Best Picture. Last night, we didn't just give a Best Picture to a black movie. We didn't just give it to a gay movie. We gave it to a black gay movie where no gay people died in the course of the film. Spoiler alert, but you should have seen it by now.
Spoiler alert, they live.
Like, were you surprised that a film that small managed to win? And were you surprised that we managed to shift the dynamics of... Because traditionally what we are looking for in a gay movie at the Oscars is a straight person being brave and playing gay, who then dies or cries a lot because his or her partner has died. And this was a movie where people got to be in love and have a hand job on the beach. thoughts?
Well, I thought for sure they were going to give it, give Barry Jenkins the director award, because I thought that would be the thing to do, right? Sometimes we give the director award to, like, the more tasteful, beautiful, quiet movie. And also, I do think the Oscars, they like to celebrate, like, a relative newcomer, a young person, like, have him come up and make a very, like, gushy kind of speech. So, yeah, I was surprised that they pulled it out for Best Picture. I mean, I think it's amazing. I think it's an exquisite movie. So I was very happy.
Mm-hmm. Karen, do you feel like to make a good, interesting, honest, queer movie, we had to change the way that narrative worked? Because there is something so interesting to me about, like, this movie that worked for telling a gay story did it by breaking it up so you saw the person in different spaces. So the silences and things that couldn't be said became self-evident.
I think so. And I think yes, the experimental form and, of the film helped create a different kind of quality gay film. But I also think it is about, moving our lens away from white gay people and to think about the way one's sexuality is a part of a kind of broader sense of an identity, a place, a location, a movement between and beyond, like, and across the Caribbean and back and all these other sites, and that there are ways in which, like, the kind of standard white gay narrative can be very, like, can either be like a repressed patrician, homosexual, Victorian, or like,
don't talk shit about Carol in front of Chris
story.
He will cut you.
No, I mean, and I love a good WASPy repressed lesbian story more than anybody, but I do think, I think that also had some different kind of stylistic elements to it. But I do think that there was something about, like, the kind of the heart and the heat and the other passions that are ignited by thinking through all of the other complications of identity alongside sexuality that make it a much richer film.
All right. Let's take a step aside and ask ourselves this question. Last night we saw Amazon represented at the Academy Awards, and our best documentary feature was a 9-hour-long documentary that everyone watched,
like,
on
7.5
ESPN. Yeah. Do you feel like the fraying boundaries that have been screwing with the Emmys are now touching our beloved Oscars? And were you happy that O.J. Made in America won Best Documentary Feature?
I thought it was stunning and riveting. And I started watching it actually the day before the Academy Awards.
Oh, really?
And so, my wife Sarah and I, we were just like, it's 6 hours later, and we're just like, we have to watch the rest. And I thought that I was all done with the O.J. stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought that I was like, I can't believe that, I probably turned this off because, I lived through it. I saw, the miniseries, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that it is such an achievement as a documentary precisely because of how it really contextualized what was going on historically in the city of Los Angeles and with the LAPD. And it was a kind of total picture of all the things that created this particular story that had such even in this contemporary moment, a calamitous end. So I really, you know, I expected not to be into it and not to like it and to be much more, I don't know, like pulling for the 13th or something like that. Yeah. Right? I'm not your Negro, but it was really great.
The context of that is what is so essential. The early stuff about the LAPD and the history of that and its relation with the community. I feel like that's what I was missing as like a child who heard like, OJ got acquitted. It's crazy. And not learning until much later about Rodney King and the cop getting off for it. Like, in many ways, OJ Made in America is like an inverse La La Land. It's like our city has this like dark underside that like is not glossy and it's not floating around in a planetarium.
So we haven't even talked about this yet. Jimmy Kimmel, was he a success?
I mean, like, largely I'm, like, forgetting him, which I think is, like, a small win as an Oscar host that, like, I don't, like, hate you, which, like, is, like, most of them I do.
Yeah.
I think I'd give him a solid B.
Like, oh, really?
I do. Yeah. I'll explain a little bit more. I think I liked the fact that he felt really relaxed and comfortable, and I felt like he was in good control the entire night, especially when the flub happened at the end. Like, a lot of hosts might have, like, just tried to be stupid and funny during that, and I think he was, like, charming and warm and just accepting of the moment.
He took the responsibility of hosting and saying, this is on me, even though we all know he's done in 2 minutes. I love that.
Yeah, I do feel like, though, he had some obnoxious moments. You know, his kind of obsession about non-white names, for instance, was just annoying, and I felt like, just drop it, Jimmy. To me, that whole moment where they had the tour bus come in, I thought that was icky. I felt like the noblesse oblige was really thick in that, and it was just kind of, like, gross.
I'm going to disagree with you here, Whopper.
All right.
I think that the big stunt is terrible to pull off. I don't understand why anyone pitches it. Like, when you're hired to write for the Academy Awards, why on earth are you looking for stunt pitches? Because they've all just been such magnificent failures. And I thought it felt cute. Like, it did feel legitimately charming. Getting to see that woman walk up to Meryl Streep and just be like, can I have a hug? Like, was so lovely after handing out pizzas and Neil Patrick Harris's magic trick. Like, it wasn't a miserable failure. It wasn't a gross anticlimax, and I was proud of it. And I also thought that the candy distribution was at least efficient. Yeah. It at least didn't kill a bunch of time.
But three times? Mm-hmm. Three candy drops? I mean, I think that actually the thing that, to me, the reason that I feel he's more of a B- or C+, is that an excellent Oscar host, I think, by the second half of the show, pretty much recedes in the background and gets the show moving. And it seemed like at some point he was just, he needed the cane. Like, it was kind of, he was like taffy pulling his way through these sketches, particularly the bit with the tour bus. Mm-hmm. That was cute and that was great, but it felt interminable.
It should have been one or two people. It would have been so cute to have a couple who's on their honeymoon. They don't know when they're here.
Exactly.
Like, then it wouldn't be about, like, it sort of felt like judging this class of people a little, since there were so many. If we're just two people, would feel about those two individuals.
But also, leaning on the black couple as, black people are zany, what won't they say, was really dangerous.
I also found the Sonny Pawar moment kind of icky, when, like, they were using him as a prop and holding him up like the Lion King.
That was the ickiest moment for me, was the Lion King moment with him.
Your job as an Oscar host is to give me at least two jokes that I remember afterwards. Mm. And he didn't do any, like, the quality of his monologue was just so thin. Like, he was just running on affability. Also, I'm so tired of Matt Damon bit, though.
Like,
every gay guy on Twitter was cringing for when it was going to be, like gay panic joke. And at least we didn't get that. Mm-hmm.
The snarkiness was either, like, not sharp enough or, you know, it just seemed a little, like, it seemed to thud. Like, all the little cuts were, like, either kind of really weirdly misplaced. Like, wasn't there, like, some sort of hand job joke at the beginning?
Oh, yeah, happy ending, they called it. Oh,
right.
No, I mean, like,
in the middle of
the audience
for
not getting, it's like, I'm sorry, a happy ending is a hand job at the end of a massage, not any hand job.
To get technical.
The thing
exactly.
is, I do,
that's on you.
I do want Tina Fey and Amy Poehler level, and that's the Globes, which is a rougher game, but, like, I do want a little bit of edge and play, because those people are sitting, the most powerful people in the world are hoping for 3 hours, and it's fun to play with them.
The the Globes speaks to what Karen was talking about. Like, when Amy and Tina host, and they're fantastic, they're barely there. They do an excellent monologue. They do, like, maybe a bit during it. But the Globes just gets through award, award, award. And the Oscars should learn something from that, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Let's sum this up with everybody saying who they thought won the Academy Awards. Because, of course, the whole point is to take home the grandest victory of making the story be yours. I'll begin. I will say Janelle Monáe, doing the most delicate of work, managed to win that Academy Awards. Like, she was beautiful, she was ever present, and she always seemed slightly bemused, even though she had nothing to do there except wear a dress. Karen Tongson, you got an offering?
Gosh, I mean, I actually, even though Moonlight sort of lost their moment at the very end of the awards, I do think that it will be remembered as the Moonlight Oscars. Mahershala Ali, I think that they won the awards. I mean, you know, like, I think that the sort of the sentiment that coalesced around the film and what happened at the end, like, you know, we'll make it fundamentally about Moonlight.
You have to pick a person. Barry Jenkins or Mahershala? Who are you going with?
I'll go with Mahershala.
All right. Margaret Wobbler.
Well, I'll go with the other Moonlight win that happened, which was the best adapted screenplay, where you had Barry Jenkins and Terrell Alvin McCraney, both of them giving really good speeches. In a way, that turned into the de facto, like, Moonlight spotlight moment, because they didn't really get to have their shine at the end. So those two speeches, I thought, just were really, they were, like, passionate and genuine, but not taking themselves too seriously and still making some political statements in there.
Though the hard part about that was realizing that Barry Jenkins is like 5'7", because he was...
Did that break your heart?
he's so beautifully put together. More I was excited that Terrell Alvin McCraney is that tall. I was like...
Yeah, he's pretty tasty.
I'd like to learn more. Chris?
I mean, I just have to say it's Faye Dunaway.
Like, that dress was great.
She is
that
dress back was great. In the conversation. She looked great. She disappeared from the stage. She was like asked by Afro. She's like, I am not talking about it. Like, we will find a use for her in the next couple of years, I feel like, out of this moment, weirdly. In a year where, like, there were a lot of deserving winners, but, like, the speeches and things didn't stick with me.
Yes. Solid points. Karen Tongson, who won the Facebook Oscar pool?
The winner of the Facebook Oscar pool is Chris Maurer from Baltimore, Maryland, Charm City, USA. I originally thought he got 17 out of 24, but he got 15 out of 24. Like the Academy Awards themselves, there was a bit of a dispute at the end because Allison Yance self-reported getting 16 out of 24, but she didn't post her ballot, a picture of her ballot on the page. So it goes to our friend Chris in Baltimore.
Well, anybody can just say anything, can't
right,
they?
Right, right.
We are a podcast of laws. You guys have been listening to Pop Rocket, the Moonlight Edition, hosted by me, Guy Branum, with Margaret Wobbler, Karen Tongson, and our special guest, Chris Schleicher. Chris, where can our listeners learn more about you?
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at cschleichsrun, or just search Chris Schleicher. I'm the most popular one.
And, of course, watch The Mindy Project.
Yes, I have an episode dropping this week.
And just keep an eye on local black box theaters to see if Chris is doing his one-man show nearby.
I have taken 3 tap dance lessons this month, so, like, just you wait.
Watch out, world. Would you send an email like Emma Stone does in La La Land with everyone's addresses?
Don't BCC.
So long, Boulder City. Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Mizzo. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Thanks to Veronica's BFF, Wilder 415, and Margaret for President for the 5-star reviews on iTunes.
Best reviewer ever!
It's a pretty good name. If you haven't already, please review us. Get in touch with us on Twitter. We're at Pop Rocket, or join our Facebook group and join the discussion. We are a production of MaximumFun.org, and our producers are Kara Hart and the vigilant Christian Duenas.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.